SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two. On this Tuesday, Andy Serling joins us from the New York Racing Association as we arrive close to the midway point already of summer season at Saratoga. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
We're good. I'm good.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah, this has gone fast, this first half. With all the backdrop that we've had to deal with, it really does feel like I kind of looked up and I saw day 19. I'm like, oh wow.
Well, you've been there for about two of them, so no wonder
that's not true.
Bad for you.
That's not true. Try maybe seven or eight.
You had been there that you came by the studio to say hi, and I had no idea who you were.
Well, that was funny actually, and Jonathan had to tell you. It's hard because if I'm there for certain races and you've done TV already, I don't see you and you can't go up to the office like we used to, you know, typically would. And it's a strange, that part of it is a very
change. Why can't I go to my office?
Well, can I come? I can't come in the office. Can I?
I don't know. Are you allowed in the press office?
I
don't make the rules.
I'll ask Pat. All right.
You have to talk to important people in Naira, not me.
Well, I will check with Pat then, because who's more important than Pat?
That's nobody. Nobody I can
exactly. Andy, we had a Travers that might not have been in its usual place on the calendar, but a performance that will stay with everybody that watched it. It certainly is going to stand up against previous runnings for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. That was a sensational performance, and I think the criticism that myself and other people had—it's not a criticism, but the potential issue with Tis-the-Law was he didn't have that breakout performance. And you sometimes it's the kind of thing you often see in the Derby. Horses are running good races, and then they the good horses will step forward and run that big race, and you hadn't seen it from him. He had run obviously very well and really better than pretty much everybody in his generation, a couple of triple digit buyer figures, but 200s. And regardless of the nonsense you'll occasionally hear of time only matters in jail and that kind of idiocy, time matters. And it's the way to really judge horses' talents over time, how fast are they capable of running when they run their best races. And this was a huge breakout performance by him, 109 buyer, and obviously a very fast race, did it pretty easily, relatively speaking. I mean, obviously Manny shook him up top of the stretch, but he basically cruised home from there. And I don't think people should minimize the horse he was running against. I mean, Caracaro is a very talented horse, lightly raced, and a horse that may have a big future ahead of him. But Tis-the-Law just, dusted those horses. And at this point, he's obviously a heavy favorite going forward. A lot of things can happen and often do in racing that, that may change that. But let's face it, I mean, the rest of the three-year-old division is playing a significant game of catch-up behind him, a significant one. And who's to say he won't even get better in his next start?
Yeah, exactly. And, it's a storyline between Manny Franco arriving. Plenty of people have acknowledged, his abilities. He's been overshadowed by the Ortizes, with the careers overlapping. This is his breakout horse. And then there's the Barkley tag, Robin Smulin and Heather Smulin story. I mean, to keep a horse this finely tuned, with all the, over the length of time and seemingly, getting better as the season goes on, it's really a testimony to the horsemanship side of this.
Well, yeah. I mean, anybody that doesn't think that Barkley knows how to train, that he and Robin do a great job together that doesn't pay attention. You have to have the horses in your barn to do it, but they've always done better than most could expect, or really anyone could expect with the horses they have. And, you know, Barkley's been, he's a household name for horse players for a long, long time, long before Funnyside. Maybe he became more of a public name with Funnyside, but that wasn't, you know, that wasn't the case for people that are following or horse racing at any level. Barkley was dangerous for many, many, many years, and he had a lot of good horses in those time periods. But, yeah, he and Robin, they've done a great job with this horse and everybody he worked with, no question about it. And Manny, it's a good story, right, as you say, because, you know, they stuck by Manny, and I'm sure there was pressure from, you know, listen, jockey agents wouldn't be doing their jobs if they weren't trying to get their horses on their riders in the best mount. So I'm sure there was a great deal of pressure over time, but Barkley stuck with Manny, and no reason not to except for, you know, outside influences, and they stuck with him in Saratoga as well. And they've been rewarded by a rider who always rides well, and he's ridden this horse exceptionally well. And it's part of the good story, right? You know, this is a good story. It's a good racing story. And I think when you think about sports in general during the pandemic and horse racing, shockingly, we've managed to do a lot of things well. And, it's no mean feat because we often manage to do a lot of things poorly and have in the past as an industry. But, you know, I'm proud of the job that the people at NYRA have done, to be associated with people who have done such a good job, and, you know, front side and backstretch, and making things happen and race and be able to race under these circumstances. So you've got this horse, and I know there's a sentiment that, well, he's such a good horse, and it would be such a bad story. It's too bad people can't watch him race, and it's too bad that people can't do a lot of things right now, going to the racetrack being the least of them. But at a time like this, he seems like a horse that's come along at the absolute perfect time. And if he wins the Kentucky Derby in right now, where we have 25 days from now, then he's going to have a chance to win a triple crown that's really a quadruple crown. And it's going to be a big, big story. And hopefully, if that story getting told, maybe the story of all the good stories of racing during this time can also get told, and perhaps focus some positive attention on the industry as opposed to all the outside negative attention we frequently get, some of which we bring on ourselves. But you know what? If we're guilty of bringing that on ourselves, we should also be, quote, guilty, unquote, of bringing some good stuff on ourselves, because a lot of people in racing have done a lot of things to make things work at a time that other sports have struggled.
Well said, and a great point. When there was no other sports even in a position to try, and then with them coming back, it seems like the bubble concept is working the best. Meanwhile, you know, baseball in particular struggling. You see the St. Louis Cardinals are completely a mess in terms of, you know, COVID positive spreads.
Have real issues. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, as opposed to focusing on the negative of them, I think, you know, that racing, we've done things well. Mistakes always get made in the attempt of doing that, but it seems like so far, you know, fingers crossed. But the bottom line is that Isola is a really good story in so many ways. There's no negatives to this story. And also, for me, I have a big issue with hyping, you know, overhyping horses as a generality. I understand on television sometimes we have to do that, though it pains me. I don't think we're overhyping this horse.
No.
This horse is the real deal. And that makes it, for me, you know, I can only speak for myself, that much better, that this is a horse that's really easy to get behind. Listen, he may lose going forward. Horses, good horses, great horses have all lost, you know, in the history. But right now, things are going really well, and it's great. So, and I hope he keeps winning. You know, nothing makes me happier than seeing Barkley and Manny win these races.
You know, a couple of Barkley tag appreciations here, and you know, while everybody keeps bringing up the Funnyside, and you know, in relation to the Triple Crown achievements and the like, but a couple of a couple of horses that people may have forgotten. No Biz Like Showbiz and Tale of Akadi both won Wood Memorials for him, right? And he won a Suburban with Dry Martini. He won Jersey Town, was a Cigar Mile winner. A bunch of great ones.
Have in common? I bet them all.
Nice.
I don't think you need to sit around and sing Markley's accomplishments. People either understand that he's a great trainer and has been for many years, or they just don't understand. I mean, I don't know how you can convince people. You know, it's you know, the Royal Mountain Inns and the Highland Springs and the, you know, and those kind of horses going back. There's just been a lot of them. I mean, he's not a guy who's ever had that many horses. But he's had great success. I mean, you bring up Dry Martini. Rob Barkley did a great job with Dry Martini over a long period of time. I was a big Dry Martini fan.
Yeah, and you know, I think my first recognition, I guess, was particularly at Saratoga, where when he wasn't yet really a New York staple, and it was Tag Off the Van. That was the moniker. That was, if Barkley Tag was coming up from, you know, from the Mid-Atlantic, look out. That was well received information. The Royal Mountain Inn, I remember being an early.
I just mentioned him.
Yeah, I mean that's what I'm saying. I just he. Absolutely, and also there was somebody less that kind of a less, you know it's funny sometimes how you associate certain, you know, certain horses might be lesser lights, they might not be stake horses, but you just Rue Art I always bring up with Barkley, and
Barkley didn't train Rue Art.
Yes, he did for a period. He had Rue Art for a
really?
Little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Who trained him when he was not Lucas or somebody? No,
Lucas might have had him. The more notable, but. Anyway, Barkley Tag is. I said on TV on Sunday, it was funny. The Barkley's age came up in I think on the broadcast, and he was identified, and that was a no-no back in Funnyside's era. You weren't supposed to say how old Barkley was because he was worried it would cost him clients.
Right?
Well, it's a story that, you know, with the Saratoga side of things and so many local connections, and I'm glad that it seems that they were able to be on hand for Saturday. It was so frustrating and disappointing, I know, for people, when we were really in the teeth of things in New York that they couldn't come to Belmont. But I think that's a distant memory with some potentially big moments to come. Andy, there were nothing but top performances, really. The stars came out, and Gamine's effort, and certainly Serengeti Empress got the day started with just a kind of a jaw-dropping, courageous effort.
She was great. Yeah, it was some performance by her. That really was some performance by her. It's funny because it got overshadowed by Gamine's effort, and understandably, Gamine was brilliant. But they're two efforts in contrast, right? Gamine's first quarter was almost a full second slower. I think it was 0.95 seconds slower. So the fact that she ran a little bit under, roughly that amount under, about a, I think it was about not 0.92 maybe seconds faster, the pace was a real function of that. I'm not saying that Gamine didn't run in some ways the most more impressive race, but Serengeti Empress didn't even break that well, and she rushed up in this huge pace, forced the pace from the inside, and on top of the stretch she thought she'd be last, right? And she just kept coming. That was really, really thrilling. And obviously I'm thrilled to see Tom do well, but taking that out of account, the personal stuff out, she was really sensational. And that's the kind of race that you just, for me, I love horses that are able to overcome the obstacles. And she really overcame, an extremely difficult circumstance. and was still able to win. So, yeah, that was great personally, but also just, you know, from a racing standpoint. And then Gamin, this notion that, you know, people saying, oh, she's going to bounce off her last race. I mean, this race should be brought out when people talk about that and say, no. First of all, I don't believe in that concept. I believe that horses run extremely well because of circumstance, and frequently less well in their subsequent starts because circumstances are different. Whereas good horses just deliver, and that's what we've seen from Gamin. She's an exceptional, exceptional talent, and she just delivered. And I know that there's a sort of wacky narrative going on Twitter from one of the connections of Venetian Sunset that, you know, she should have pressed a Gamin harder. Well, okay, you know, I do like to see horses be ridden aggressively, but what was the scenario that she pressed Gamin harder that she was going to win? You know, she benefited just as much as Gamin did from the relatively moderate first quarter. The rest of the race was very fast. She ran the same buyer figure she seems to pretty much run in all of her races. Now, maybe if she was under ideal circumstances, she might have run a bigger figure, but I don't really know. I think she ran the race she's capable of running. She's a really nice horse. She's not Gamin. There was no scenario where she was going to beat Gamin. She was going to make Gamin run faster, and then she was going to somehow beat her. No, maybe she would have been third behind Up in Smoke. Maybe they both would have finished behind Up in Smoke, for all I know. But it wasn't going to benefit Venetian Harbor to go a lot faster. She was the second-best horse in the race. She was the second-best horse in the race going in. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of hers, so I'm not saying that as though I don't like her. But she was the second-best horse going in and the second-best horse going out. And sort of riling up the least common denominator on Twitter, see, that's sort of a rough way to go, and you know, kind of takes away from a really, really good race between good horses. But Venetian Harbor is a terrific racehorse. Gamin is a really special kind of racehorse. And now, if we can get away from the narrative that she should be rushing into the Derby, then we'll be fine. I think she should do what Bob Baffert thinks she should do. He's pretty good, that guy.
Yeah, and it's going to be an interesting debate. And in fact, Tom Amos, who was with us yesterday, sort of floated things to some degree because I asked him in reverse, because he kind of wondered out loud about Serengeti's Kentucky Oaks success, and then the campaign concept of, well, she's a year older and more mature, and we're going to go after route racing, and that proves to be, you know, against the grain of her aptitudes. And so
that's a tricky conversation, because when you're a three-year-old filly, there are very few opportunities sprinting. And Tom ran on the big one, the test, and he lost to Kofefi fair and square. She ran great, but she lost to Kofefi. Tom ran her in the races that you were supposed to run her in, essentially, right? I mean, where was he? You know, the big money, the big prestige was in the races he ran her in. And the reality is that she won the biggest one of all of them. So he did something right.
There aren't that many
sprints. And even when you get older, where are the big sprints? You know, normally the Humana Distaff, you know, I guess the one thing you could say in retrospect that Tom, instead of running her against, what's her name, Midnight Visu, in the race, the grade two, he could have pointed for the race at Keeneland, right? The Madison. On the other hand, was she going to beat Grana that day? And also, by running in the race he ran at Churchill, he gave himself more time to get ready for the Ballerina. So I'm not defending Tom, because he's a friend, and I don't think he planned it this way. But in reality, the decisions he made, whether you want to look at them back and say, well, maybe we should have run the Madison, I don't know. Whatever decision he made seemed to work out pretty well. He won the big race on Saturday, right? So things worked out, but I think they worked out. There weren't that many choices for him. There were no sprint races up until before the Madison, right? He wasn't winning that 6-furlong race at Oaklawn against Be a Mischief. Where the hell was he going to run her, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
We didn't run a distaff at Aqueduct.
And he, but he agrees, or he understands that equation, and that, you know, the Oaks, that taking a horse like a Gamine to the Oaks is what you have to do. And of course, you know, the part of this that's out of, you know, that's a fish out of water this year is obviously the timing, as opposed to the Oaks in May and where you would be. And you were kind of riffing on this whole thing, this whole part of the equation, because, you know, people talking about Tis the Law. What if Nadal was around in May?
I always get back to the concept in life, you know, if how your life could change if you left your house 5 seconds later or 10 seconds later or earlier, right? If somebody got in a car crash and they had left their house 10 seconds earlier, they probably wouldn't have gotten in that car crash, right? Then again, how many car crashes have we missed because of when we've left? Time is a very interesting concept, and events that take place are all at the mercy of time, right? And this notion that if this had been a normal year, we'd be now celebrating a Triple Crown winner that also won the Travers is just an absolutely preposterous notion. Because there's absolutely no way to predict and say that would have happened. Might have happened, but as you say, had the Derby been run on May 2nd, it doesn't seem like Tis the Law necessarily would have beaten Nadal. I'm not saying he wouldn't have, but we don't know that he would have. And there's a lot of different things that may have happened in different ways had the Triple Crown been run its normal thing. As things have played out, they've played out really great for Tis the Law. So, and I'm not saying the connections are suggesting otherwise, but outside people may be. And let's celebrate what's happening in the here and now and not suggest that this necessarily would have happened or could have happened in another world. Let's just be happy with the way it's worked out now. It's working out great. And if he wins the Derby, it's going to really work out great. And it's going to make that Preakness a really big deal. A really, really big deal in a really cool way, in a very positive way. And anybody that thinks that he's going to face, where he faces the Derby, and that Preakness, if he wins the Derby, is going to somehow be a 6-horse or 8-horse field, and nobody wants to take him on, I think they got another thing coming. What happens if Gamine runs a really big race to Kentucky Oaks and it shows she can extend her brilliance to route races? You know that they're going to be pressure and some thoughts that maybe she takes them on in the Preakness. What about that horse of Taz, that Happy Saver? I never get his name. I know I'm the worst.
Happy Saver.
Okay. I'm getting there. I like that horse. Now, I'm not saying he's being Tis the Law, but he runs pretty fast races in 2 races. And what happens if he runs the Jim Dandy and runs a big race? What happens if Caracaro takes another step forward in the Derby and runs really well, and then all of a sudden he's going to Preakness? There's so many possibilities. You know, I don't want to write off Honor AP just yet. Art Collector is not close to as fast as Tis the Law, but he's a pretty neat horse. There's some good horses out there. They're not as good as Tis the Law, but, you know, there's a long way to go. We've all seen a lot of horses that look really great, and then suddenly, you know, things change quickly in racing. And there are horses out there that may be really good. So some good racing left to be done in this Triple Crown. The way it's working out right now is really good. And if Tis the Law can win the Derby, win or lose the Preakness, it's going to be a fun month leading up to it, where a lot of good, positive attention is paid to horse racing. Isn't that kind of a cool thing?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Let's talk about the 2 turf races, and I also want to fit in the maiden the maiden successes. Andy, give everybody the treatise on the DQ, on Imprimis.
Well, I don't have a big issue with the DQ. Personally, I might have left the horse up. He won that convincingly. I'm not sure what justice was necessarily served by the DQ. Having said that, the notion that our stewards, and I disagree with our stewards strongly about this DQ on a different topic, but They're fairly consistent. It was a closer finish in the Bowling Green, but it was a similar situation, and they took the horse down, and I thought it was the right call. So I don't have a problem with this. The reason I probably might have not taken the horse down was it was a more decisive victory. But I think that's a debatable concept, and I think our stewards were fairly consistent with how they've made calls in the past by taking that horse down. The problem I have is that it's very, very clear to anybody that I know that watched the race, that if you believe Is it Imprimis or Imprimis?
Either way, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. If he fouled, was it Shecky Shabazz, I think?
Yeah.
The horse Irad was riding? That in turn, Irad's horse was forced into Pulsate, the horse that Manny was riding, the six horse.
Right.
And fouled that horse at a key moment in the race. So if you're taking down Imprimis, how are you not placing him behind Pulsate? Just as you placed Saddler's Joy behind Channelmaker. The exact same obvious infraction. This one was even clearer. Because I would argue that the horse who actually was the most adversely affected was Pulsate. And not because I bet him. He wasn't winning the race, so I'm not. It's not sour grapes. I don't care. But he was clearly fouled. And I don't think it takes, I mean, I could show that to anybody and they'd see that. So I don't understand how the stewards missed that. So I think they botched the inquiry. They botched the disqualification. I don't think their decision was necessarily a bad one. I think the placement of Imprimis, if they're going to take him down, was poor. Wasn't poor. It was badly flawed. Badly flawed. So that's my problem with the call. Not that they took him down. I don't know how they can possibly justify that he wasn't involved. Either Shecky Shabazz fouled Pulsate, or Imprimis caused the situation for Shecky Shabazz to foul Prime Pulsate, because Pulsate was fouled. That's a fact. So I don't understand how they don't see a cause and effect. They don't want to take Imprimis down. That's another decision. But if you're going to take him down, you have to say that there was a domino effect here, at least to me. So I'm perplexed by that.
And I will only reiterate that at the very least, Joe Orsino's got to be pleased that he's got the good Imprimis to work with going forward.
I'm sure he is, but that's a frustrating DQ for him.
Yeah, no doubt.
And he did such a good job getting the horse back to where he was and getting that kind of win for a horse that just seemed to have lost his what made him kind of, and as you know, I've been a fan of Imprimis since his second. I remember I saw him win an allowance race his second start. I went, wow!
Yeah,
that's true. And I remember thinking, this horse, he's more than just some silly Gulfstream 5 furlong horse. This horse is, he's got something going on. It just seemed like he kind of went the wrong way after they went to Ascot. And, you know, he got a couple, you know, race dynamics were against him. And the Breeders' Cup sprint, turf sprint was a joke the way, you know, one of the speeds got left and the pace didn't develop. So all closers had no chance. And that worked against him. But, he was good. I was glad to see it. I liked him. I hope he comes back. And, I hope for them that he comes back. And, you know, it'd be great if he won the Breeders' Cup turf sprint because I feel like he... I mean, cheated's the wrong word, you know, because it's not that he wasn't cheated out of a win. It was a legitimate disqualification. You know, it's just it was such a good performance. I feel bad.
And I know that to some degree, American Sailor backs into this, but it is the story involving Wayne Potts is very nice and. His first graded stake win.
It's not that horse's fault that the horse got taken.
He ran a courageous race, American Sailor.
Yeah. Okay. What was the other race? What was the other race on Saturday? The other stake?
My sister Nat.
Oh yeah. She got a great ride. She got a great ride by Jose Ortiz.
Yeah.
Really, really great ride. And I thought the runner up ran very well, Mississippi. So the third horse. Finally got back to her decent form. Yeah, I mean, My Sister Nat has been such a big project, you know. She really was so mediocre when she got here. And, you know, given her pedigree, and not just a half to My Sister Charlie, but also Sotsass is, you know, one of the top horses in Europe this year.
Right.
She's just obviously a massive disappointment, right? The bad family member. But Chad's really done a good job in bringing her along. And I think that's, you know, what's lost. With trainers like Chad Brown or, you know, the top trainers, it's when they take a project and they can get that project in the right direction. You know, you can get a lot of really good horses, you know, and I'm not knocking, obviously, the job with a Bricks and Mortar or a Lady Eli, but these are also very, very talented horses. I think when you really see the skill of top trainers, and I'm not trying to single Chad out. There's a lot of really good trainers out. It's when they get horses that aren't that good. You know, you could say the same for Todd with Spinoff. You know, winning a race like that. I don't think Spinoff is any kind of super talent, but Todd's really managing to get the best out of him. And I think you're seeing that from Chad with My Sister Nat, where, you know, he's getting her to perform better. And also, you know, the increased distance has helped her as well. And I think it's a cool story that Peter Brandt wins the Weya when Peter Brandt owned Weya for much of her racing career in America.
I've got a funny, you mentioned Peter Brandt, and it, there was something I meant to tell you. You know, we've got a new two-year-old, and I asked Paul Barone, who's got him down at Belmont. He's been in there a week, and I said, you know, what's he like? What's he like around the barn? He said he's really sensible. He said he sleeps, he lays down, I mean, constantly. He said, every time I look in there, he's laying there, you know, taking care of himself. He says, you know who used to do that? Track Baron. And Paul rubbed Track Baron, right? That was Peter Brandt.
Sure.
Yeah. And I said, well, boy, I said, Paul, if he's a third of what Track Baron was, we'll be tickled. My eyes lit up when he said that. I thought, wow.
He said that he's not going to be a Track Baron.
Well, he said the Track Baron used to sleep 22 hours a day. Literally 22 hours. He said,
no wonder I liked him.
Exactly, right? I love it. Andy, regarding some of the other, you know, non-stakes activities, what'd you think of Mutasabek?
Well, I thought ran really well. I mean,
it was good, right?
Yeah, no, you got a buyer in the mid-80s, 83,
85.
Absolutely. We've seen some good two-year-olds. I mean, that Steve Aspison horse that won the
Jackie's Warrior.
That horse is good. Even the second horse is good. I mean, obviously, Mutasabek, yeah, no, I agree. We've actually, you know, it's 2 weeks in a row, you know, sort of a week period where we've suddenly seen some really nice two-year-olds, you know. Yeah, no, what's not to like about Mutasabek? I hate the 5.5 debuters, but...
I know, it's sort of...
Not nothing against the horse, just I always wish they'd go six, but no, he certainly didn't look like he had a problem going six. Yeah, that was a good race. Good horse.
There was also some of the turf babies too that are starting to roll out.
Yeah, they're so hard to judge. You know, they're so hard to judge unless they're particularly brilliant. Doesn't mean they're not good. It's just I have trouble judging them in general.
And you know, we didn't you know, Barkley not only won the Travers, but he started the card. That older male Doswell. To start the day, ran a nice race.
You know, I feel as though it's not 10:34, and it's starting to get to that time when we should be moving on to the next guest.
Not necessarily.
Grasping at straws, bringing up maiden winners.
No, I'm going through.
Maiden winners.
Well, that's all right.
Doswell ran well. He did. He did run well. He was also walking on the front end, but he did run well.
Well, that'll happen. You mentioned Spinoff. I'm glad you got that. Oh, did you have any thoughts about I gave out the dollars and cents on Sunday's Empire Six, but that was a very tricky sequence. And then to have, you know, I think back, Andy, to our old days of $2 pick sixes when you would never use a horse like Bank Gala in a $2 pick six, you know, a perennial maiden.
I singled the horse as the eighth pole right now, so what do I know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I was fine for the first three legs. They would have all been A's. But it would have all fallen apart after that.
Yeah, Spinoff was the end for me, and then Bank Gala I didn't have anywhere, but that Venezuelan Hug looks like there's upside, and so does Secondary Market out of that sequence, by the way.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, the Secondary Market's got to show she can stay in the racetrack, right?
Yeah.
But hopefully, yeah. No, she did run well, I agree. So did Venezuelan Hug.
Some things to look forward to this weekend before we go?
Racing.
We've got the Adirondack.
The Alabama's on Saturday.
Alabama Saturday.
You know, Harvey's Little Goyle. It's funny, I talked to Bill Mott about that very early in the meet. We were talking about her because, you know, I'm a big fan of Harvey's Little Goyle. And I don't know if it's the reason. Obviously, it's different ownership, but I wonder if with Paris Lights getting, she seems she got hurt right about a week ago.
Yeah.
Out. She unfortunately, that made it easier for Bill, but, you know, we're talking about it. And you know, you have the Sarah Oaks, obviously, but it's ungraded. It's not going to do a lot for her. You can always go back to the turf. And I agree with some things I read that Bill Mott said, basically, which is, you know, who knows? You can't use that Oaklawn race to evaluate her. You just can't. She got eliminated in the first turn, that huge field. And, you know, obviously, you know, the winner of the race, who's Skydiver, who's the favorite in the Alabama, justifiably so. You can't judge it. You just don't know. And a race like the Alabama is a career-making race for a horse like Harvey's Little Goyal.
Right.
So I totally, you know, understand. I mean, you know, the funny thing is, looking back on it, you know, there were some people that would have said that Bill should have run Royal Delta on the turf instead of running her in the Alabama, right?
Hmm.
Because she had a big pedigree, and there was that suggestion that he could do that.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, he wouldn't have done it, as evidenced by how well she ran, and I'm sure he probably wasn't overly surprised by that, but also because he's doing the same thing here. You have to run in the races that matter. You can always go back to the turf. But these races, you know, there's one Alabama. Theoretically, one Kentucky Oaks, you know?
Yep.
Those are the races you need to be in if you have a horse that has any chance to win them. You have to be in them. And, you know, I'm going to have a tough time not picking her.
Hmm.
I got nothing but love for Harvey's Little Goyal.
Now, Andy, got to watch quite a bit of the shows this week.
I'm sorry.
No, they were great. I was at the track Thursday for our race and Saturday, but I watched otherwise and really enjoyed.
Thank you. I'm sure I had little to do with it. I'm going to go. Who's on next?
Bill Downs from Indiana Grand.
All right. We'll have fun with Bill.
We will. We will. They got a couple of stakes tomorrow, and we're gonna look forward to
it. I'm gonna go see my mom.
Nice. Say hello, and Andy Serling, everybody. New York Racing Association and the racing this week, even ahead of tomorrow's draw for Saturday's card, is very nice. You got three very good days to look forward to. Tomorrow, the Grade Two Adirondack to kind of the counterbalance for the Saratoga Special, the middle portion, and you got the two grade threes, then the two grade twos, and then the two grade ones at the end of the meet, the hopeful and the spin away. So Adirondack, a six-horse field. Ava's Grace from Diodoro and Davy Cohen. Speaking of Davy Cohen, let me give a shout-out to Billy Castle, the one and only Billy Castle, undoubtedly working his way. He sent me a text. He's driving up. So I'm sure the top is down in his latest late model convertible and making his way to Saratoga right now. So best wishes to Billy, and who had kind of a little health scare over the winter, but doing good now, and always happy to know that Billy's okay health-wise. And I guess we'll see him this week at the track. But Davy Cohen aboard Ava's Grace, 10-1 for Diodoro. Cassie, Make Mischief, Johnny V aboard. This is the feature, by the way, goes as the ninth tomorrow. And whenever I ask Andy for selections, he begs off. He's, look at them. They're probably up at the website already. I should pull him up, actually. Make Mischief, the Into Mischief filly that was second in the Schuylerville, and at a big price, too, chasing Day Out of the Office, and Gary Barber and Cassie. That's out of the nice Spitestown mare, Spiteful Lady. Lilac Lace, Anthony Quartarolo, and Ashley, coming off a Keeneland Turf Sprint win. Castellano jumps aboard, 6-1. Thoughtfully, Steve Asmussen. Santana actually had ridden Lilac Lace, but sticks with Thoughtfully for the Hyder family. Steve Asmussen, Tappet filly, that was $950,000 at Saratoga last summer at the sale out of the Seeking the Gold Mare pension. Boy, you know, pretty interesting, actually, how fast this one was early to win at Churchill in June. With that pedigree, Tappet out of a Seeking the Gold Mare, And, you know, to win first out going 5.5. Interesting. Lucifer's Lair for Stuart Grant. Actually a Maryland bred. Quality Road, Philly. Out of the Put It Back Mare, Devil's Cave, Elkstone, and Lucifer's Lair, 3-1. Arad, Todd, coming off the beginning of the meet victory as the 5-2 favorite. And Mike Ryan and Mike Stidham, Beautiful Farewell, who's a maiden, but has kept good company, and including starts at Belmont and Saratoga. Ran against the boys, actually, in her debut at Belmont. That was the race with Garoppolo. Interesting. And Rosario jumps aboard, 8-1. So, six-horse field, and the Adirondack, the grade two. 10-race card tomorrow with the jump race. So, we're all set. We're going to turn our attention to Indiana, where tomorrow the Caesars and the Indiana Grand are both featured, and Bill Downs joins us. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent, and great to get you back. And we had fun last week when I was really very pleased that I reached out to you kind of impromptu last week to talk about the snack and the Phillies. What was the Phillies'
Ellen's
name?
Ellen's Lucky Star.
Thank you. Ellen's Lucky Star. Exactly. I'm glad we did that because you and I think we helped some players, I think, last week.
Yeah. Strong Tide was, got bet down. I was hoping for a better price. You know, I make the morning line, so when it gets bet down, sometimes I scratch my head. But bettors must have saw a lot that I saw as well, probably even more. They were even stronger on him. He went off as the favorite. And then Nothing But Flowers, front-running victory in the Ellen's Lucky Star, another logical horse, but it was nice to beat. If you don't like chalk, you're trying to beat the big favorite, Copper Nickel, and Nothing But Flowers went all the way on the front end in that Ellen's Lucky Star Stakes.
Well, and you know there were a couple of things about the two races that were notable, and for Copper Nickel to go off below even money, and you had to somehow believe that she was going to magically take to the turf,
right.
in this setting. And I'm sorry, why would you do that when there was a horse like Nothing But Flowers? And frankly, 780 was a very acceptable number. And if you somehow were clever enough to find Randy Klopp and Mint Chocolate Chip at almost 50-1, mm-hmm. you know, keyed some terrific exotics.
Absolutely, yeah. That's the thing. This time of year in Indiana, they'll throw a turf stakes race and for the 3-year-olds and you know the like in the snack stakes where you had Mai Tai's Gem and Two Last Words who were the top of the heap in terms of dirt horses, their turf breeding was they were not awful, but it wasn't great. But do you want to swallow a low price on a big unknown? It's it's one thing to swallow a big price on an unknown. It's another thing to swallow an unknown at a short price, and that showed both those cases, all those cases that the turf breeding and the turf form won out.
Well, and there was plenty, going back to the snack as well. The horse that the angle that I talked about was Unbridled Express on that topic.
Yep.
And how, as an Indiana bred sire, he gets turf runners and cash logistics on the stretch out, to me was fascinating from Genevieve Londano and Nutty Train from Jeff Greenhill. Both of them by Unbridled Express. They both ran nice races. I keyed off of cash logistics and the exacta was very palatable and made it worth playing. And, Bill, we also sent people in the direction of Choctaw Bingo, the first out winner for
yep.
Ray Hernandez in the second race, because I was trying to stress to people Air Force Blue is, I know there's some other first crop sire that seems to be getting mentioned constantly, yet Air Force Blue is the one getting results.
Yep, and that's something that's something that I don't necessarily concentrate as much on is that the hot first crop sires, and if you can get on it early, and sometimes it might just because there's such speed, and all that, but it becomes trend by the time we get to the fall, where you can definitely take a look at seeing which sires are a lot of hype and which sires are actually performing, and that might be one to take a look at down the road. I know I will. Well, if I see them, I'll be putting a little circle around them.
Well, and to give a recap of, in addition to the stakes results from last week, let's also mention some of the returns. On Thursday, $791 in the pick five, with a third choice and a co-second choice and three favorites. Then on Wednesday, the day in question, $980. That was with two favorites and three second choices. So
yeah.
I don't know how you go wrong. You got to look at it every single day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
And I'll do my track publicity hat, put that on for just a second. Pick five every day, 11.99%, one of the lowest in the country. I think the only one that's lower is Canterbury, but low takeout in the pick five. And then coming up on Wednesday, tomorrow, we're going to have a $100,000 guarantee in the pick five, which will encompass the Indiana Grand and the Caesar Stakes race.
We're going to look at those momentarily, and I'm just looking for yesterday chalked out. Yesterday was crazy. You had four favorites, right?
That's the point, Doc.
And a second choice. And also the price gets depressed because you had races come off the turf, and so there are some, you get some favorites because of it, including, by the way, those that listened yesterday. We had Tom Amos on, Bill, and he guaranteed Treasure Trove as an MTO, and that was a drop kick. His first time starter, though, did not got bet actually, and did not run as well. That was Little Stitious that we talked about, and in fact, it was Brad Cox with Coach that broke the maiden.
Yeah, it didn't say in the chart. I'm looking at the chart right now. It didn't say he had a troubled start, but I don't think he got off to the best start in the world. I still think that horse is one to follow, Little Stitious, but he got that down to odds on. So, there was huge value there, but I'm actually calling it up one more time here just to see what happened with him at the start. He just got off to a sluggish start and just wasn't strung out of the gate. So, I would say that the chart was accurate there. So he needs to get better from the gate. And once he does, he does have some ability. That was just my on-the-cuff analysis of watching that start again on my computer.
The breeding on Little Stitious came up yesterday. He's a Ghost Sapper. She's a Ghost Sapper out of the Quality Road Mare Broadway Play. And might be looking a little further along when it comes to stretching out. So yesterday, the pick five, just $5,780 with a 960, a 320, a 340, a 320, and a 580. That's the lowest pricing of the season, actually. And off the turf will do that to you. So we're not gonna. I guess we can average. We can do two things. We can take out the lowest and the highest, and use those as outliers. And the payouts have been spectacular today. Today you got just a quick glance at today's card. You got a 11 race card, including a couple of quarter horse races to close things out, the 10th and the 11th. 2-year-old open company fillies going a mile on the turf. That starts the pick five. You've got
Steve, I'll stop you right there.
All right. Off the turf, and let's cross that off. Off the turf, and not bad, actually. There was only the two maiden races, the two divisions of maiden races, one for two-year-old fillies and one for three and up boys that are coming off. And they both had big fields of 13 and 12. So hopefully they stay together to some degree.
Yeah, I think they will, especially that the seventh race. I got early scratches, and there wasn't anything listed there. And you know, the favorite in the race, I was not really thrilled about him on the turf. It's Prince of War for Cox. They paid $450,000 for this colt, but Son of Cairo Prince out of a lawyer Ron Mayer doesn't scream turf to me. Even though Cairo Prince is all right with first-time turf horses, but he was going to be a low price, and I thought but now with the race off the turf, probably more playable to me with that colt, but still a pretty big field in that race. And then you mentioned there's the ninth race, and those horses will stick in the winners of two $10,000 claimers. So hopefully the integrity of the fields will stick together, and we won't have a festival of chalk, a $55 pick five like we did yesterday.
All right. Well, and we got to deal with it. It is the summer. It is the Midwest, and there is going to be weather now and then. As long as we don't see flying cows and Mrs. Gulch on a bicycle, we'll be okay.
Yeah. Cause, speaking of the weather, Steve, I don't know if anyone was watching the news when they had that derecho that flew through Iowa and then.
Yep.
Flew through Chicago, and it kind of came down here. We got hit with plenty of rain. I don't know much damage in the Indy area, but I was concerned. I rushed home. I was like, I got to get the furniture, patio furniture inside and whatnot, so it doesn't end up three houses over. But it really wasn't that bad. There was some wind and all that, but it wasn't like anything that you saw on the news or anything like that. But it just added another wave of rain that we've been hit with here in central Indiana.
Well, hopefully it clears out, because tomorrow we've got two turf stakes. The Indiana Grand goes as the seventh and the Caesars as the eighth. Let's talk about both the three-year-olds. These are the open company varieties, both 150,000 and part of a nice sequence. Let's talk about that Indiana Grand first.
Okay. I made In Good Spirits the 7-2 morning line favorite. The third, fourth, fifth, and seventh place finishers from the Regret are in this Indiana Grand Stakes race. In Good Spirits, Inside Post didn't get the lead last time out at Churchill Downs and hung in there and finished a good third. But this is a race that I like others besides In Good Spirits. She wins. I tip my hat. Great. Wonderful. But there's a trio of fillies that really get me going a little bit. And there's a second, third, and then there's a one big long shot. So the second choice in the race in my morning line was the 10-horse Dream of You for trainer Brad Cox, a daughter of commissioner who won on off surface and won under basically a hand ride on June 21st and went to the front end and never looked back. And the second place horse, How Ironic, came back to win at Ellis Park, a turf allowance race on August the 7th, so that race was flattered a little bit. Does have a turf win, broke the maiden on the turf, so that takes out that X factor, unknown factor, with Dream of You. So I like her a bit. Ask Bailey, who was third in the Jessamine at Keeneland as a two-year-old filly, and second at Kentucky Downs in one of their big $500,000 stakes races. She came back in 2020 in that race up at Canterbury. Yeah, it's just a $50,000 race, and she faced much, much better in here. But she came back. That was just outstanding what she did up there. She had the race won probably at the 3/16th ball, and she was basically wrapped up like the last, almost the last furlong. I'll say the last 16th for sure, but that was a big time performance. Ask Bailey Maker and gets Deshaun Parker, and then the long shot I really like, Steve, is the 11 horse Hendy Woods, who had a wide post in the Regret Stakes and finished seventh. Watching the race back, yeah, you expect horses that are at the back of the pack to have some run. But she was really always looking for a running lane in the stretch, and I don't think she got to produce her best. She was 2-for-2 going into the race. She's a lightly raced filly by Uncle Mo out of a forestry mare. Stone Street Stables owns Hendy Woods, and I think at a big price, she is worth a look. I don't maybe she'll get bet and whatnot, but I had to put her at 20-1 because there are a lot of fillies in this race that have got a lot of form. But those are the three that I liked. I didn't know what you thought, Steve.
Well, and this is a terrific group of sophomore fillies. Nasty got my attention, yeah, from Cox, and I don't know if we'll get 8-1, but you know, has a forward style and has absolutely found a home on the grass, bred by Stone Street and campaigned by the Roths, Ellen J. Foxwoods. I think you know, anything near 8-1 is going to be, you know, very, very attractive. Pass the Plate as well for me. The, yeah, Silverton Hill homebred for Paul McGee. And you talk about Hendy Woods out of the regret. Essentially, Hendy Woods and Pass the Plate were moving, you know, in tandem in that and coming wide and coming late. So I have no argument at all with using Hendy Woods at 20-1, Pass the Plate at 5-1. So, I mean, if I like Pass the Plate, there's no reason not to also want to use Hendy Woods. I mean, they basically finished, you know, equally in that race, and you're going to get, you know, 3-4 times the price on Hendy Woods. So for me, how about 4, 6, and 11? I think we've got at least a try somewhere in amongst our ideas. Let's talk about the boys. And these races, by the way, go off at 5:08 Eastern and 5:36, the 7th and 8th, tomorrow in Indiana.
Yes, and then the 8th race, Caesar Stakes, 150,000, big field in here. And you got from last year in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, the 2nd, 10th, and 12th place finishers from that race. You know, they've gone on and done other things since then, but they were all in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf last year, and the horse that finished best out of that race is the second choice in my morning line, Billy Batts, who went to Saudi Arabia, then came back and flopped in the War Champ, but in the dirt and the Iowa Derby ran a credible third. And Billy Batts certainly does like the turf and has a good post and should have something to say about the outcome. But, you know, Peace Achieve, that made as the favorite 3-1, was bet a little bit in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf 2020 debut, but graded stakes winner as a 2-year-old, won the Bourbon Stakes at Keeneland. It was hard to ignore that. And I made him the favorite. Has tactical speed, got a little too far back in that Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, and seems to be training all right for Mark Cassie. And then a long shot, if I'm going to mention the top two in the market, betting favorites, Andesite for Brad Cox, ran in that Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf last year, but came back in 2020, ran at the Short Keeneland Meets in July, and race up against older horses. And I always make mention of that in early part, middle part of the year when the three-year-olds are taking on older. And it didn't run that bad. Loomed large was my comment, and I think he can step forward off of that race. You know, he had some two-year-old form, second in the Pilgrim at Belmont, third in the With Anticipation at Saratoga early on in his two-year-old campaign. And I think that he might be ready. Second race off the layoff to make a step forward as well. He's a big price at 15-1. And one other I'll mention, you know, Fancy Liquor didn't get the lead. This race looks like there's a lot of early speed in the race, Steve. You got Juggernaut. You got a lot of High Holy coming out of a sprint race. You got a few other horses that like to be on or Sunstation on the outside, the 10 horse. Now, Fancy Liquor didn't get the lead, but he was right there at the end of the Transylvania Stakes. So I can't throw him out either for Maker at 4-1. So for me, it's probably Andesite. I do like Fancy Liquor, Peace Achieve. It's not as I don't have as many long shots that I like in this race, but the Andesite might be that long shot. But what did you think about it, Steve?
Well, and the fact that you cited the potential, you know, pace scenario, there is a lot of pace in here. And, yeah. You know, it doesn't look like a race where you say, oh, there's a lot of pace, and then, you know, they open the gates and you're shaking your head as a player because nobody goes. It seems impossible that there isn't going to be authentic pace in here. Even the horses that are route going pace parties, they're authentic, you know, I want to go types. So I think your approach of looking for horses from either off the pace or just, you know, right behind the speeds makes a lot of sense. And Andesite, again, if 15 to 1, anything over, I don't even, 8 to 1, I think would be delicious on him. Second off the layoff, and the 3-year-old seasonal debut was very solid at Keeneland in a solid group, and you know, Prescott actually seems like a go-to call for Brad Cox as well. 2 for 5 and a nice ROI. He's one of only 3 horses that have even run over the course, and you know, reminder that he broke his maiden at Indiana going back to last July. So yep. There's a lot to like about Andesite. We'll see if he, you know, becomes kind of a mojo type and takes a bunch of money. Cox has also got that Caninos. And, yeah. You know, there's a horse that people are going to look down and see Transylvania. Oh, he was ninth. He was ninth beaten 2 lengths against real horses. And was right there with Fancy Liquor at the end. He's 15 to 1.
Yeah, Caninos, it might have the right running style, too, for this race.
Yeah.
We talk about speed and pace pressures and horses that don't like to be too far off the pace. And Caninos is going to be probably in the back 3 of the field, I would guess, early on in this race. And if we do have any sort of pace meltdown, you know, the turf course, I'm going to think it's going to be probably either, I'm going to guess, yielding. Maybe it'll be good tomorrow. Hopefully, we'll do everything we can to keep the races on the turf. I know 1 year we had to take it off the turf, but you know, it would take another monumental downpour before we would do that. But you know, there's going to be enough pace, and even if the fractions are not fast, if we're talking about a good or yielding turf course, relative speaking, they're going to be fast. And Caninos might be one to throw into your exotic tickets because he's got the right running style for a race that seems like there's a lot of early speed.
And in addition, he is going to be a price, and Alex Ashard aboard, and you look down at Caninos, he also happens to have 2 good performances over less than firm turf, and you got that going for you as well. A really good pair of open company 3-year-old stakes at Indiana Grand tomorrow. Bill Downs won on your Twitter feed, and of course Rachel McLaughlin and Nancy Uri Holtis, and the whole team. The racing has been just terrific since the bell rang at Indiana, and it continues. Big full fields virtually every single day, and it's, if you're not paying attention, you should be. Bill, I appreciate it, and might not talk next week, but we'll talk ahead of the governors and the first lady.
Sounds good, Steve. Thanks.
Bill Downs, everybody. Bill Downs won on Twitter, the voice of Indiana Grand. And, it's funny. I think yesterday I called this stake the Centaur, which was the old name, and now it's the Caesars, and Caesars is being sold. And I know that the sale was approved by the Gaming Commission. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure if this is going to be the last Caesars. That's a fair question down the road. We'll see. Let's take a break, and hour 3 starts with Tim Layden, and of course the longtime Sports Illustrated writer, and now with NBC Sports. Tim was back to his home region, of course, comes from the Capital District, and we'll talk to him about pandemic sports and racing during this era, and what he thought of the Travers and the upcoming Derby, and much, much more. Hour 3 at the races, Sirius XM. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Ah, Saratoga. It's history. It's tradition. It's world-class racing. It's jump racing. Yes, steeplechase racing has played a role in Saratoga's rich history and tradition since 1864. And today, it's a part of what makes Saratoga so special. Watch every Wednesday of the meet and two special Thursdays featuring the Grade 1 AP Smithick on July 23rd and the Grade 1 New York Turf Riders Cup on August 20th. Savor the thrill of horses flying over fences. Steeplechase racing, it's a Saratoga tradition.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on? University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow. What other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Serious.